161 goes out to the Inebriati, Original 109, Red Patch Boys, Tribal Rhythm Nation, Kings in the North, U-Sector. This is TFC Pitchside on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Least goals against, most points, best goal difference. Not a bad season, fellas. This is TFC Pitchside with Dan Riccio and Thomas Michalakos.
And now an opportunity with his foot to win MLS Cup for Seattle, which he has done. The Seattle Sounders have done it. MLS Cup winners in 2016.
Ah, Roman Torres. You are now forever hated by the TFC faithful for all those crunching tackles on Sebastian Giovinco and then putting the icing on top with the winning penalty kick. Sounders beat TFC 5-4 on penalties. They were 0-0 through 120 minutes. Thomas, it was a good season, man.
It was. Neon green has been effectively banned.
It's rave green.
Is it?
Rave, yeah.
Well, it looks neon to me.
Well, it's rave green.
Rave green.
Get your greens down right, especially when they're the champions.
Well, it's neon to me. But anyways, it has been effectively banned in the six. Mm-hmm. Could you see anyone wearing those colors ever again after what we watched on Saturday?
No, unless you drive a Kawasaki Ninja.
Yeah.
Probably not. Especially not in this weather.
It hurt, man. It hurt.
It hurt. You know, it was tough because, you know, and I think, you know, a lot of people watching at home and maybe watching in bars or casual fans who took on the ride after the incredible drama that was Eastern Conference Final against the Montreal Impact. I still thought it was a fun game to watch in the stadium. And that being, you know, TFC dominated, you really felt the intensity at the stadium of the game. And it's unfortunate the way that it played out for TFC fans, but, you know, there are different ways to win soccer games.
But overall, it wasn't aesthetically pleasing.
No.
To the average fan.
You can appreciate the intensity that was at hand.
The intensity was there, but, you know, Cup final, the average viewer coming in to watch a game, they don't really want to watch 0-0 games, right? You wanted goals. Didn't happen. It felt like a punch in the gut. I mean, you've been following this team. I've been following this team professionally as a fan. And it was great to see just the rise and all the good things that were happening for TFC. They deserved it. The players, I cannot look at any one of these guys and say
they had a bad game.
No. They gave everything. Unfortunately, played a team that put 10 people behind the ball. And like we said with Kurt, it's going to take Stephen Fry to have the game of his life for this team to win. And he did. He made that save. That save that he shouldn't have made, he made it, and his team was able to jump on his
back. Did he have the game of his life, though, aside from that save? Like, that might be the best save we see in world soccer in 2016.
Do you want me to tell you why it's a game of his life? Because that save pretty much won him MLS Cup. Because if that was in, it was over. Seattle wasn't going to open up. It was done. And he made another save in the PK shootout.
Oh, come on.
It wasn't a good, wasn't the greatest save ever, but for a goalie.
Bradley, like, basically told him, illustrated exactly where he was going to shoot that thing.
Yeah, it was a bad PK, but you know what? It happens.
And honestly, that was one of Bradley's best games as a TFC player. It sucks that that's how we're going to remember it. Because
there'll be more.
He was everything. And, you know, if TFC ends up winning on penalties, I think I vote Bradley as man of the match. He was essentially a big part of the reason why Seattle didn't get any shots on goal.
There's a reason why he's captain. Let's put it that way.
And I mean, every time he just completely snuffed out anything there. Seattle didn't create anything because of Michael Bradley, along with the rest of TFC's defense. But anytime anything got dangerous, Bradley always seemed to pop up in the big situations.
It's all about Fry, though. That's why he won MVP.
We are going to get to Jimmy Conrad. We're going to get to some MLS offseason news, TFC picking up options and declining options on several players and some others who are out of contract. Plus, they will release their TFC or their protected 11 for the expansion draft to come on Wednesday. But the big storyline of the match, as we know, is Sebastian Giovinco. Substituted in the 103rd minute for St. Ricketts. Before we talk about it here for a second, Thomas, let's hear from the coach, Greg Vanney, as to why Giovinco came off the field.
Yeah, he couldn't move. He looked at me. It's not like I take him off because I want to. I look at him and he gives me the sign that he can't go anymore. And when he feels like he can't go, then he feels like he's more of a liability to the group than anything. And so that's the decision. It's not one that I generally want to make, but we had to.
There it is. And I mean, it's tough because a guy's injured. He doesn't want to come off the field, I would think, but it does bother me. Like, he does walk off the field under his own power. TFC had basically done everything to stop Seattle from getting any kind of chance at their own goal. Can he not just stick it out for another 15 minutes to take a penalty?
Or what was it, a minute before the break?
Before the first half of extra time.
Didn't he come off in the 103rd minute? Yeah. Something like that, yeah. Well, yeah, until you hear it from the horse's mouth, everything is hearsay.
Giovinco left before we even got into the dressing room.
So everything's hearsay. I mean, Vanney could say, he gave me a look, that's what I thought. They could have discussions that we don't know about.
What was that Giovinco was complaining about when he came off the field?
That's the other thing. If he gave him that nod and said, I need to get off the field, okay, why was he freaking out on the side? See, there's a lot of questions that we don't know the answers to. So to say he was injured, to say that he came off under his own power because he wanted to, we don't know. But he looked pissed coming off. And I don't know who that was directed to, because there was like a handful of people.
It was a frustrating game, right? Because it could have been the fourth official standing behind Greg Vanney. Could have been Robin Fraser, the assistant coach.
Could have been the Sounders bench who was yelling out. Who knows?
It didn't look good, and it made a lot of people think, what the heck is going on here? Why is Giovinco coming off?
Well, you heard that in the stands.
And
I can
you know
tell
what?
You that.
He was largely ineffective. I mean, especially late in those later minutes, he was really ineffective. And TFC, I thought they would have brought on Ricketts earlier. They didn't. I'm more questionable. I didn't even get to go into Vanney's post-game news conference, but I wanted Ricketts on sooner. I wanted to see Giovinco, Ricketts, and Altidore on at the same time. Like,
see what
we've
they
seen
can do,
it
yeah.
So many other times before. The only way he was going to do that after he made the first two substitutions with Giroux and Johnson was if he took off one of the defenders. And then you completely change everything that has worked for large parts of the match.
What would hurt more, though? If he were to do that and they would concede in extra time or lose in penalties? What would have hurt more?
I think losing in penalties.
Yeah. It would definitely.
I mean, either way, we know TFC went for it, right? I think the problem
110%.
Is the problem is you bring on Ricketts there, and I mean, I was saying it with James Sharman in the press box. Like, you know, Ricketts isn't going to take a penalty.
No, but they wanted to end it.
You know
that
you
time.
Obviously yeah. Yes, and Ricketts had several chances to do so, and he's the one who provided the cross for Altidore. That was incredibly stopped by Stefan Fry. And anybody wondering why Altidore didn't try and power that in or whatever, Altidore couldn't have hit that any better.
No,
it was a soft cross. It's basically just put up there. He has to try and loop it over Stefan Fry because he's not going to get any power on it.
Well, he's not going to get any power on it because as he was running in, it was such a...
It's not coming at him with pace.
There was no pace to it. It was just up there. It was like an alley-oop.
Yeah.
Go and get it. And he did. And it was great how it was coming down. And just, it looked like it was going to beat Fry. It looked like it was going to beat him. And then out of nowhere, he just went that further, like just an inch more. He just projected his body. I don't know how he made that save.
The best save in MLS Cup playoff history.
Easily.
Or MLS Cup history.
Game saving.
It was unbelievable. Like just pulling your team back.
Literally
from
pulling.
The bowels of death. And
well, you saw Ricketts on the side, eh? Because he was past the goal line and he thought it was in. Yeah. He had his hands raised, everything.
For a moment, you thought or you wondered what's going on with goal line technology. Man, we could really use that here, but.
But no, in this
it
one,
was,
yeah,
it was a
was
good, good save
completely.
When you saw the replay. But yeah, I mean, you know Ricketts isn't going to take a PK. So taking off Giovinco at that time, you realize you are worsening your chance of winning the penalty kicks. Tough decisions have to be made over the course of a match. And Greg Vanney had to make them. I know there are some people already calling for his head that he would have substituted Sebastian Giovinco. Let's try and wait until locker room cleanout day tomorrow.
They're the same people that were calling for his head all season anyway.
Yeah, so. And let's try and find out the whole story before we start making any of those brash.
And that's not the reason why they lost.
It's not the reason why they lost.
Let's not focus.
They lost on penalty kicks, and that can happen. Seattle was better at taking penalties. They looked confident taking those penalties.
We could take five guys and a goalkeeper and beat TFC on penalty kicks because it's just like that. It's a crapshoot.
Well, you read that book by Ben Littleton. What's it called?
Soccernomics.
12 Yards.
Which one?
No, it's about penalty kicks.
Yeah, no,
the science behind it. The psychology behind it. It's actually pretty good. You should read it. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. Dan Riccio, Thomas Mitchell-Lakos. We are going to get more into this game now and more into the offseason stuff later on in the show. But joining us now is a man who is in this city. It is Jimmy Conrad, former U.S. international, and as you know, the YouTuber of all YouTubers. Jimmy, thanks for doing this today.
No problem. Thank you for that lead-in. I really appreciate that.
No problem, man. Like, you must have been freezing. Like, let's just make sure. First, I guess you got home okay on your drive back from Toronto. It was a crazy snowstorm on Sunday.
Yeah, there was. We were aware of it, and there was a little wintry mix on the way back, but we got ahead of it, and it wasn't that big of a deal. But we knew everybody that was flying was texting us and calling us to see if we had left yet so they could get a ride back to New York City. But we were long gone by that point.
Well, that's good to hear. And as for, like, your general health, I mean, have you ever experienced an MLS Cup or a football match as cold as it was Saturday with TFC in Seattle?
Actually, the last time I was that cold was MLS Cup 2010 between FC Dallas and Colorado Rapids in Toronto. So I have some fond memories of not being able to feel some special areas on my body.
Now, I was outside watching the game. I wanted to take it in with the fans, so I hear you. It took me 24 hours just to get my core temperature back. But what was it like for you following it with the fans? How did that feeling go?
Well, it was interesting because I had picked Seattle to win it all before the playoffs started. So I had a little bit of juice on the game with regard to that because, as you guys know, I like to be hailed a genius, especially a prognosticating genius.
So don't we all?
I had that kind of – that side, yeah, of course, that side of me going. But when you get there and you're on the ground in Toronto and you're going – I walked on with the march with them, and you can just feel how much it's going to mean to the city. I mean, deep down, I was really hoping they would win. It would have been a very special moment. I happened to be in Chile when Chile won the Copa America for the first time in their history. And just the party and the atmosphere and the elation would have been really neat to see Toronto because, as we know, Toronto Sports haven't won a major title since 1993. And maybe Joe Carter needed to go out there and hit a penalty. You know what I mean? I think that's what we needed to have some crazy moment to tie it all to Toronto Sports. But I was really hoping that Toronto was going to win. I was hoping for, honestly, a little bit better of a game. It seems like every time the game's on national television, that's cursed. It just doesn't have the juice that you want it to. But it had the drama at the end, and it was just unfortunate it didn't go Toronto's way.
Now, you've been in the broadcasting field for quite a while now, but when you did play, and you did play at BMO Field, take us back to that. Was it different, the atmosphere being a player and just seeing how the Toronto Mad fans go crazy?
No, it's changed dramatically because I actually played in the first game ever at BMO Field in 2007. That was the game where I had never heard or really appreciated the beauty of the Canadian national anthem like I did when they sang it before the game. And then, of course, the guy who sang the American national anthem like botched it like 30 seconds in and everybody started laughing, which I thought was so funny and really memorable. Like, I'll never forget that game. We ended up winning 1-0. Just thought I'd throw that out there for you guys. But I don't feel like the fans and the core and the support has changed. I just think there's more of you guys. And obviously you built a stadium to house more of you guys. And it's just really special to see because I don't think TFC and their fans get the credit they deserve for creating the atmosphere that's changed the demographics and the look and feel of MLS. Seattle and Portland get that a lot. And I think those and Vancouver and those, that area of the country, the Pacific Northwest, of North America have really done a good job, but TFC was there first. And I think TFC got in there and showed MLS headquarters that, listen, we don't need to market the soccer moms anymore. This is the way we should do it. This is how culture should look. This is how a game should feel for the fans and for the players. And it's you guys that deserve that credit. So I really hoped that you guys could win to continue to, I don't know, to get rewarded for that mentality right from the beginning.
Yeah, and, you know, the atmosphere was great, and I guess it had to be great just to stay warm in the stadium on Saturday. but getting into the game here a bit, Jimmy, you know, I guess the big storyline coming out of it from a TFC perspective is the Sebastian Giovinco substitution. Now, I mean, Greg Vanney says after the game that he wanted to come off, he just couldn't do it anymore, and really his play kind of reflected that late in the match. But at the same time, you're into the 103rd minute. You know, taking Sebastian Giovinco out of the game worsens your chance of winning a penalty shootout. And to me, when you're that close to the end, given the fact that Seattle had really created nothing all game anyhow, I kind of feel like you find any kind of way to keep Seba out there.
I agree. I think it's hard to know whether you put this on the player or the coach. I mean, the player's obviously making the ultimate decision. Apparently, he looked over the coaching staff and asked to be subbed. Now, as a coach, I think I would like to have a conversation with him first before I made that decision, and I don't think that ever happened. I didn't witness that happening, where he came over to the sideline and they kind of tested him out. I mean, I'd rather have a 70% Giovinco on the field than 100% of pretty much anybody in MLS. So I would want to, like, hey, man, we got 17 minutes. Or no, what is it? Yeah, 17 minutes until we hit penalties.
And we even have a break. Like, we have a short break
right,
here.
We have a break. Right. So, I mean, there was a couple things that could have been done. So I'm curious, and I think the criticism is fair, because he's your best player. You pay him a lot of money to step up in these big moments. And for him to, even knowing the penalties are maybe forthcoming, for him not to suck it up is disappointing. Now, I don't know the extent of his injury. Right. I don't know the extent of his relationship with the coaching staff. I don't know any of that stuff. But from an outsider's perspective, it was a little disappointing. And I've seen some big players bow out from penalty kicks before. I remember in Dallas, I think it was the 06 World Gold Cup, or excuse me, MLS Cup between Houston and the New England Revolution, and Clint Dempsey and Steve Ralston both were nursing injuries and didn't want to take penalties. So then, no disrespect to Jay Heaps, but he stepped up as a leader and took one, and he kind of pushed it like Michael Bradley, where he didn't get enough on it, and that ended up being the one that cost them, you know. But if you had Dempsey or Ralston, two of your better players, you know, that could have gone different, and New England might not be the Buffalo Bills of MLS soccer. You know, they yeah. might have won their first cup, and so you wonder if Giovinco was around and would have stepped up and been the leader that he'd been all season, if things would have been a little bit different. And that's a lot of what-if speculation. That's a lot to put on him. But also, you pay that money, and you see his talent, that you don't want him to step off the field when you need him most.
Yeah, and I think Greg Vanney's taking a lot of slack. And, I mean, we don't know the full story just yet. Hopefully, we can find it out over the next couple of days. But in terms of Giovinco's injury and how serious it might be, because we may sound stupid in a couple of days' time about this, but, you know, for me, being that guy, you are the guy on the team right there with Jozy Altidore or Michael Bradley. For you to take yourself out of the biggest game, the biggest moment in this club's franchise history, that raises a few red flags for me about Sebastian Giovinco.
Yeah, no question. And to go back to your earlier comment, I sound stupid all the time, so don't worry about it. It's a normal thing. I'm always proven wrong, but that's the fun of it. No, but you're right. I you have to wonder what's going through his brain at that point and what he's thinking. And maybe he thought, hey, listen, I'm not as good to the team right now, given my condition. I'd rather bring in a fresh body, and maybe that will make the difference. Maybe we don't even need to go to penalties. So there's definitely another side to consider. But I guess from a coaching standpoint, I would like to have a conversation with him first to say, hey, listen, I understand where you're coming from about getting a fresh body out here on the field, but you're Sebastian Giovinco, and we might need you in penalties. Yeah. So maybe you should reconsider. And as you said, there was a break that was coming up. Why not address that in the break? Why not gut it out until that small break, get a better understanding of where everybody is and how the team's going to feel about it? Because even as a teammate, if you see your best player asking to go off, you might not say anything, but you're thinking, like, what is going on? Why would he ask to get off right now? And I think that can, yeah, I don't know. It's like a little subtle body language thing, but why is he asking? You know, I don't know. It's happened to me in my career. I can't remember. I don't even know if I'd name any players. But it's just disappointing when you see that happen, because you know if it goes to penalties, one of your best penalty kickers taken is that guy. And
he's not going to be there.
It's just, no, he's not going to be there.
Yeah, and quickly, I know you were a national team teammate with Jozy Altidore and Michael Bradley. Like, did you that was not a great penalty for Michael Bradley. Did you ever see him in training take penalties? I know he hasn't really been, he hasn't really done it throughout his career. So maybe that played a factor into it. But, you know, I just don't like it when a guy goes up there and has, at least look wise, he didn't have any conviction when he was going up to take that spot kick.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of your free kick takers, right? So he obviously knows how to place a ball. He mm-hmm. knows how to place it with power. So he's a good selection. Obviously, he's your leader. You don't want your captain asking off of penalties, too, if Jovinko's not around. So I appreciate him stepping up and taking on that responsibility. What I thought was interesting was his stutter step. Anytime I've seen guys stutter step, it seems like they're waiting for the goalkeeper to make a decision, and they'll go the other way. And I think once he did that and the goalkeeper didn't move, he then made his decision, I'm just going to pass it into one of the corners. And obviously, Fry was there to make a good save. So it's disappointing, but I don't know. He's one of your guys. He stepped up in a big moment. It didn't pay off for him, and I'm sure he'll regret that for the rest of his life. But he's of any guy that's on the team that can handle that type of disappointment, it's Michael Bradley, and he'll come back stronger, and he'll make sure the team is back in a position to vie for MLS Cup in the future.
Look, I totally agree. It's hard to point fingers at players who step up in that occasion. You're a player yourself. You know how hard it is and all the pressure, especially for Toronto players shooting at the supporters' end. It's a lot of pressure, so I don't fault any player for missing a penalty. But the thing that bothers me the most, and it's always bothered me as a soccer fan, is games ending in penalties in playoffs, knockout round, or cup finals. I find you gotta go to the stamina of both teams, and you have to play until there's a goal in, until someone drops. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I appreciate that too. I think there's a lot of romanticism there. My dad, when I was growing up, would always say, if the game's just going to go to penalty kicks, why not just do it? Why even bother with the 90 minutes? Just do it at the beginning so we can all go home and have food. You know, my dad was always thinking about eating food.
He sounds like a smart man.
he does. There are moments for sure. He's very smart. But I agree with you. I think there's some sort of romanticism attached to letting the guys just go out there until they can't run anymore. I always kind of threw out some ideas in the past of just taking off one guy at a time. So every 5 minutes, you got to take off a player. So now you're down 10v10, 9v9. And I think there's some strategy there. Like, which player are you going to take off? You can take off a defender. You can take off an attacker. And I like that element of it, that there's still some strategy behind who's got the best stamina, what's our best formation as we start taking guys off. You know, once you get to 7v7, I mean, somebody was going to score at some point, you know? So the game would end pretty quickly. And I don't think that'll ever be adopted because the rules of the game are so tried and true that nobody wants to change it. But there would be some element of that would be a lot of fun. And in the fans, people watching at home, be like, oh, my God, who's he going to take off? You know, who's coming? I mean, Jovinko can't run right now, so or whatever it is. Are we going to keep him on, keep him off? Does he have enough in the tank to maybe get us that goal if we counter the other way? I mean, there's so many fun elements part of that. So that's what I would like to see, but well, I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon.
Well, I definitely agree with you because it's more tactical. It's more in-game. You have to look at your formations. You got to look at who's healthy instead of this, you know, free-for-all shootout where one team has zero shots on goal for 120 minutes, and then you go into penalties. Yeah. So I agree with you. Yeah. Every 15 minutes, they should take out a player and just keep going.
Yeah. Let's just change soccer while we're at it.
Let's do it.
Completely here.
Make it better.
On the line is Jimmy Conrad, future president of FIFA, and he is going to forever change the laws of the game.
I'm voting for him.
Jimmy, you know, I here in Toronto, the narrative is obviously been TFC played well. They dominated and were unfortunate to come away with the victory in this game. And it's hard to get around that because, you know, overall, this was a very strong performance from TFC back to front, aside from the fact that they couldn't finish. But, you know, Seattle not getting enough credit for how well they defended over the course of this game as well. When you have the highest scoring team in the MLS Cup playoffs with TFC, Jozy Altidore, Sebastian Giovinco, all those guys, I mean, Seattle did an unbelievable job defending in this game.
No question. And I think their team set up well against what Toronto has to offer. You know, Jozy Altidore, known for his strength, being able to turn and roll guys with his power. You're running up against Torres and Marshall that are bigger than he is. So it was always going to be a challenge for him to get the ball in the spots that he likes. He's always going to have a big guy right up his backside, making it very difficult for him to hold the ball I thought Seattle was excellent in doubling down on Jovinko anytime he got it. To get the first guy wouldn't try to win it, it'd slow him down. And then another guy would come from behind and try to pick Jovinko's pocket. And I thought it worked to great effect. And it made Jovinko not get into the spots that he liked or made him uncomfortable to, okay, he'd pick up his head, but then he couldn't find that target right away. And then he'd have two guys on him. Mm-hmm. And then he couldn't get into that flow that I thought he's known for and patented for. You know, he had a couple free kicks in good advantageous spots that we've seen him score goals before. He couldn't take advantage of those. And you kind of wish Seattle wasn't as good on set pieces as they are. You think you'd want them to be more Montreal-esque. They give up a goal on every set piece. So yeah. That's unfortunate that, you know, Toronto ran into a good set piece team, defending set piece team, and a team that could match up well. I thought Michael Bradley, to bring him back into the conversation, I thought he had an excellent game, probably one of the best I've seen him play for TFC. I thought he was all over the place. I thought he did a good job without having to man mark Ladero, really breaking up a lot of their attacks and not letting them get into a flow and really breaking up anything Seattle had in terms of having impact or controlling the game. I think there was only maybe a 10 or 15 minute section in the second half where I thought, all right, Seattle's got a little bit of the grip here of the game. It seems like they've got a little bit of momentum because they're possessing it. But outside of that, I thought Michael Bradley was excellent, and it's unfortunate that he's only going to be remembered for a poorly taken penalty kick. But overall, I thought Seattle was going to be difficult to break down. They've proven against Colorado and FC Dallas along the way that they had some spine, they had some backbone, they knew how to grind out results, and they did it again in the final.
Did you like the way Alan Kelly managed this match as the referee, or do you think Seattle got a little too... or they were allowed to get away with too much on Jovinko and Altidore with their aggressiveness?
I thought it started off really well. I think there was some chippiness, and I thought he did a good job of not just handing out cards, to hand out cards. He's having conversations with guys. He understood the magnitude of the game and the emotion that was going to be attached to it. As the game went on, I thought he did let some things go that maybe he could have called a little bit tighter. But I don't think there was any call that he made or didn't make that was going to change, that would have changed the outcome of the game. I thought he gave you guys a lot of free kicks in and around the box, something you guys are good at, didn't take advantage of it. So I thought overall, I thought he did a good job of not getting in the way and just letting the players play, and I have a lot of respect for that. Now, as a player that's been out there, if you know that you have a referee that's going to let things go, you're going to try to do more things to see how far you can take that advantage. And yes, at times Seattle probably took advantage of his leniency. But I don't, like I said before, I don't think there was any call that he did or didn't make that was going to change the outcome of the game.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. But you know, the TFC fans always looking for someone to blame, as any good fan would. So when can we expect your video on your YouTube channel of your Toronto chip to come out?
Yeah, Wednesday. I appreciate the promotion for that. We did a pickup game before the game. It was great. Like 40, 50 people came out, and it was a lot of fun despite the cold weather. And so we're going to have two halves of the video. First half will be about the pickup game and the sense of community and all the people that came out from Toronto to come play the beautiful game with me, and then the MLS Cup game itself. Now, we don't have highlights, so we're just deciding whether we're doing reenactments with Star Wars figures or what. I mean, we're still figuring that part of it out. But it should be a lot of fun, and hopefully it'll showcase Toronto as it should in a really positive way. I mean, I thought the march was excellent, and the support up there is incredible, and it continues to get better, and it's only going to get stronger with more and more success that you guys have.
Jimmy, really appreciate you doing this, and of course, all you out there can follow him at Jimmy Conrad on Twitter. Really appreciate this, and it was good seeing you over the weekend.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for your time.
There he is, Jimmy Conrad of... well, Jimmy Conrad, whatever he wants to do. Get him on Instagram, get him on Twitter, get him on YouTube. He is one of the best that does talk about footy in North America.
He does what he wants.
Yeah, basically. It's tough, and it was most tough getting out of the stadium or going into the room after and seeing the looks on their faces. You feel for these guys because...
well, you see them all season, and you see the ups and the downs, and then... you go in there and go, it can't get better than this, and they just lost it. So imagine.
Seeing Moro in the room after, he looked like he needed a hug at the time.
Did you give him a hug?
No. I also felt like he just needed his space.
Yeah, that's more what he needed.
And, you know, Bozy got a good picture of him that really captures his feelings in that moment of when TFC lost. And you could see it on his face without having to hear words. And you feel for these guys because, man, it was, they played a really, really good match. And it's just the way the cookie crumbles sometimes.
Well, you look at it and you go, you feel for these guys. Imagine how much worse off it feels for them, let alone the fans. When that goal went in, it sounded like 30,000 people, 35,000 people just got punched in the gut at the same time. Just deflated.
Stupid Roman Torres. I kept saying he looked like a guy that they picked up off the street at UFC 206. They're like, hey, you want to play center back today? Yeah? Yeah? Okay, good.
We don't have a fight for you, so come and play.
Kick off at 8.
He does not look like a soccer player at all.
Not necessarily. The attention now turns to the offseason. Expansion draft on Wednesday, re-entry draft next week, waiver drafts, super drafts, and the MLS offseason full of drafts.
And if it's not confusing now, it'll continue to get confusing.
Yeah, we will try to unconfuse you in the next segment with who TFC may be protecting and some news on players that are coming back. They made some contract option decisions already this Monday. Dan Racho, Thomas Michalakos, TFC Pitch.
Someone took the words to my song. Someone took the words to my song. The next time I write a song, there ain't gonna be no word. Let the music go on.
Follow the guys on Twitter at DanRiccio590.
Oh, yes, I will.
And at UnfitRef.
How can anyone be so wrong? Take the words away from my song. The only words I ever knew, I had those words written just for you.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Hey, Stephen Basher, defender for Toronto FC. You're listening to TFC Pitside.
Ring the alarm. Sound is dying. Whoa, hey.
Well, Stephen Bateshore, you are a defender of Toronto FC today. But how much longer is in doubt? Dan Racho and Thomas Michalakos just ingesting the unprotected and protected lists for the upcoming expansion draft on Wednesday when Atlanta United and Minnesota United, a couple of Uniteds,
They're running out of soccer names. That's the problem.
Start to fill out their rosters with some unprotected players from other MLS teams. Get to that in just a second. But did want to mention some other news first, and it all kind of coincides. So TFC had to exercise a whole bunch of contract options today, and they did so on a bunch of players. Clint Irwin, Alex Bono, Drew Moore, Nick Haglund, Eric Zavaleta, Mark Bloom, Jonathan Osorio, Armando Cooper, that's an interesting one, Jay Chapman, Tsubasa Endo, forwards to St. Ricketts, Jordan Hamilton, and Mo Babuli. They were already six players under contract. They were Justin Morrow, Stephen Bateshore, Michael Bradley, Marky Delgado, Seba Jovinko, and Josie Altidor. The ones who are without contract exercised options were not done on Clement Simonin, Chris Minella, Daniel Lovitz, Benoit Cheru, and out-of-contract players include Quillen Roberts, Ashton Morgan, who it would seem is very likely to return, Josh Williams, and Will Johnson, who is a free agent. Lovitz, Morgan, and Williams are all eligible for MLS re-entry draft, so TFC would have to get in quick on bringing back Morgan if they so choose.
I'm not surprised that of the ones that are out of contract, they didn't give contracts. So did anyone pop out at you?
Morgan, I do think, because he's homegrown and also
he hasn't played.
Yeah, he struggled with injury this year, but he is a great backup to have for Justin Morrow, who's a guy who really put a lot of mileage in this year.
He's a great athlete.
Did Justin Morrow. I still think there's a place on this team for Ashton Morgan, and it may not seem all that big, but he's needed, especially in this 3-5-2 formation, which puts a lot of pressure on those left wing backs. So there's that. And I wanted to point out, Cooper, before we get to the expansion draft stuff, and one thing I really want to find out tomorrow, Thomas,
yeah,
is if the option being picked up on Cooper means that his loan option to buy was picked up from Arabe Unido.
How are you reading it?
I mean, they say an option's been picked up. He was on loan. So if an option's picked up,
it's to buy.
It's to buy.
Because they had that option, right?
Right.
So that's how I'm reading it.
Yeah, that's how I'm reading it as well. So we'll have to try and get some clarification on that. Stay tuned at DanRachel590, at UnfitRef on Twitter. Locker cleanout day is tomorrow for TFC. And I imagine there will still be some long faces around the TFC camp. So that brings us to expansion draft stuff, Thomas. I'll read it like this. Automatically protected is Bono, Chapman, Hamilton, Manella, and Morgan. And the protected list is Altidor, Bradley, Cooper, Delgado, Endo, Jovinko, Haglund, Moore, Moro, Osorio, Zavaleta.
And it makes much more sense with the Cooper thing,
mm-hmm,
because they're protecting him and they picked up his contract option.
Right.
So you have to read it as he is going to be here. He's part of the long-term plans.
Exactly.
Manella, not so much, though.
Unprotected is Babouli, Betashore, Bloom, Cheru, Clint Irwin, Will Johnson, Daniel Lovitz to St. Ricketts, Quillen Roberts, Clément Simonin, and Josh Williams. Interesting stuff there. I think the names that stick out for me, obviously, Betashore and Clint Irwin, two big parts of your starting 11. Will Johnson, not so much. It may stick out to some people, but he's a free agent, so I think TFC know that he was already going to test free agency. If anybody wants to select him, go ahead.
Yeah, you still have to get a contract with him, right? You have to negotiate a deal.
Exactly. But Clint Irwin, a guy who made just over $100,000 this year, seems like a goalkeeper that would be very attractive to two teams, Atlanta United and Minnesota United, who don't yet have one. Sean Johnson was rumored to go to Atlanta, but they worked a three-team deal and sent him to New York City FC this weekend.
And they need a goalie.
Yeah.
Because they got rid of both of theirs in this.
And I would say, skimming through the other lists, I mean, Chris Seitz of Dallas was left unprotected.
Bobby Shuttlesworth.
Shuttlesworth was left unprotected by New England. I'd still say I'd rather have Clint Irwin over those guys. Clark was left unprotected by Columbus, so that's an interesting name as well.
Thing is with Clint Irwin is he's a great goalie. I wanted him to be the starter going into the playoffs. I wanted him to be the starter in the playoffs.
Irwin or Bono?
Clint Irwin.
Yeah.
I've said it on the show plenty of times when we had this discussion. Even though Bono was doing well,
Bono had the better stats and the better record.
Got to go with experience.
I think Irwin looked better in the net overall.
Yeah.
Just had that experience.
But here's the thing. You want to grow your team. You want to grow this young talent that you have. He's a Generation Adidas player.
You selected Bono.
It makes sense to me to leave Irwin unprotected because I think Bono can do the job.
This is the benefit of having a guy like Alex Bono, who is automatically protected, so he doesn't fit on your list. You don't have to squeeze him in on your list. And if you have to leave Irwin unprotected so that you can select another guy, then... You know, if you're going to lose Irwin, you're going to lose Irwin. You're probably going to lose someone because you're MLS Cup runner-up and you got a pretty deep squad. So,
and they left Irwin off maybe just to keep Tsubasa Endo on there. He's a young player.
And he's also an international. And you have to select three internationals. Jovinko, Cooper.
Minimum.
Endo. And some worry as to whether or not Osorio, I guess, would be an international as well. But maybe not for TFC.
Ricketts is the other one, though.
Ricketts, looking at MLS Players Union and the player salaries that they released, Ricketts was basically on a bare minimum contract, $63,000 for the year. And I guess that's prorated, whatever. So he's not on a big deal. And his option was picked up. I have to think TFC has a pretty good inkling that Atlanta or Minnesota will not select to St. Ricketts.
Here's the thing with that theory, though.
Because he is an international to them. Remember
yes.
that.
But here's the thing with that theory. Out of all those names that are on this list,
mm-hmm.
Betashore is another one, which he had a great season.
Cap number is high. TFC is taking the risk that Atlanta or Minnesota will not want to absorb that.
But with Ricketts, out of all those players, he's really shown that he can play in this league and he is a force. And when he's not making any money, barely any money, he's on the minimum. That's enticing to me if I'm Atlanta or if I'm Minnesota.
100%. 100%.
So that's a worry there.
Tim tweets in, scary to risk losing Betashore. I mean, you have to risk somebody. You're going to have to risk guys.
But he's making money.
He's making about $250,000, and he's getting up there in age. So you wonder if TFC is just willing to take that risk right now. I would say this. The players I would think most likely to get taken, Clint Irwin, Mark Bloom to St. Ricketts. Those would be my top three as players to possibly get selected in this expansion draft.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you on that one because I'm looking at it and Babouli, that he's a mystery to either one of those teams. And same with the other guys. Those three are the big ones. And we know Will Johnson, he's going to be a free agent, so you'd be foolish to pick him because you're going to lose him in a week.
Yeah, and TFC may end up bringing back Will Johnson. It's just a matter of whether or not he wants to be a guy who's not guaranteed to be in a starting 11 every day. I wonder how many jobs are out there in MLS for him where he's going to be penned into the starting 11 for every single match day, barring injury.
How much is he making?
He was about 400.
Oof, that's a lot.
Yeah, so, you know, there's a lot more TAM coming in and stuff like that, which would leave it very interesting to see if he does get picked up elsewhere. So, yeah, those are the guys I would say. I would say Mark Bloom is very interesting as a Georgia native to maybe get taken by Atlanta.
Homecoming of sorts.
Be their right back or, once again, be a squad player for them. That's kind of what they're looking at here is building a team of squad players. Atlanta's already added a whole bunch of guys. I mean,
and adding some veterans to the mix. Yeah. Michael Parkhurst is one of those veterans that they added.
They did that over the weekend. They have Kenwin Jones already, formerly of Stoke City. Yes.
Remember him?
Miguel Almiron, very interesting player. I think he was playing with, was it River Plate this past year? It was very interesting.
He's a DP, though.
That he is going to be a DP and they're number 10. So, you know, they've already begun filling out the roster. Minnesota has guys from their ASL. Around the league, like Marcel DeJong, David Edgar, those are names that stick out from Vancouver's unprotected list, mainly because they are Canadian. But again, unlikely to be selected because they are internationals to teams like Atlanta and Minnesota.
Looking at this and saying those are the three players that might get selected.
From TFC's
end? Yes. Clint Irwin, if he gets selected, are you fine with that? I think Bono can do the job.
Right.
Or Bono. Bono.
I'd be worried going into next year with Alex Bono as your starting goalie.
You'd be worried? I'm not that worried.
Not that.
He's proven he can do the job. He's a great professional. You see it every day. Mm-hmm. We've spoken to him before, too. I think he can do the job.
There's always going to be a worry with a young player coming into and being given a job, being thrust into that job.
Of course.
You know, when he takes over the job for Irwin and it's, okay, this is my chance to prove myself. I got nothing to lose here. He did well. I mean, aside from, there was some bad goals.
He's a young player. That's
obviously,
fine.
The San Jose one record, comes to mind.
But he also didn't play just a handful of games.
No,
he was in the meat of the season. He showed that he is a professional and he can be relied upon.
His record was like 8-2-5 or something. He only had two losses.
You want to give a young player like that,
yeah,
that opportunity if it's made available. And it looks like it'd be made available because Clint Irwin, for either team, to start your franchise with, great keeper.
Yeah.
Great keeper.
It's only 5 rounds is the expansion draft. You can only lose one player. So 10 players will be selected on Wednesday, and one player from any of the 20 rosters can be taken. A couple of names on New York Red Bull are interesting. Ronald Zubar, Damien Perronel, if you're looking to help out your defense. Haven't really delved into the deep end on which of these players are out of contract and stuff like that. I imagine that that's a big reason as to why some of these names have been unprotected. And again, you know, money is a big factor in this. Also, Dan Kennedy was unprotected by the LA Galaxy. He's maybe another guy who's out of contract, though.
LA Galaxy, it looks like they're shredding their entire roster. Yeah, Mike McGee's another great pick for either one of these franchises coming in.
So we'll see on Wednesday. As for the rest of the MLS off season, some dates that you need to know. December 13th, the expansion draft, it will begin at 5 o'clock Eastern time. Free agents may engage in negotiations with all MLS clubs as well. List of players eligible for selection in the waiver draft released. Oh, sorry. I was saying Wednesday was the expansion draft. It's actually tomorrow.
Well, so you, said,
expansion
you said
draft.
You
is,
said Wednesday and then you said tomorrow. Yeah.
So expansion draft is Tuesday, 2 o'clock Eastern time. December 15th is the waiver draft. December 16th, re-entry draft begins. 21st, the clubs may no longer sign or trade their own re-entry draft eligible players. Player trade blackout window, list of available players in stage two of the entry draft.
It gets confusing.
Yeah, there's a lot of entry drafts. December 22nd, re-entry draft stage two. And then they get a couple of weeks off. January, MLS Combine. 13th is the Super Draft. And the 23rd of January, 2017 MLS preseason begins. So we get a long time before the next season begins.
What is that? Like 90? What is that? 30 days?
Yeah. It's
40 days?
Not very long. It's like 6 weeks. Jay says, I can't believe they left Betashore unprotected. That seems to be the big hubbub with UTFC fans.
He's making a lot of coin. It's going to be at his age. He might still be there.
I do wonder about selecting Endo over Irwin, because I do think Irwin provides you more value and maybe has more value in trade. But
hey, he's a young player. They picked him. They are committed to him. So I'm putting all my cash is going in Bono's camp.
It might have something
camp.
To do with the international tag as well.
I'm Endo. Good with Bono.
Thomas, it's been a fantastic season.
It has.
It's our first year doing the show. We're going to have another one next week, kind of recap everything that happened in this amazing run to the MLS Cup final. Didn't end with a win, but just want to say, and we'll go more into this next week, but we really appreciate all of you that have come along for the ride and enjoyed this season alongside us.
And embraced
fun,
the show.
Embracing the show. We hope we've made following TFC as fun as it can be in this really the first extremely successful season that the club has had. Still didn't lift the trophy, and that trophy box at the Kia training grounds is still empty, where the MLS Cup should have been. But there's always next year, and there's also CONCACAF Champions League next year. And another Canadian championship to be won.
We might be sent down to Mexico to do a Facebook Live. Who
you
knows?
You never know. That would be the ultimate. But that's things to hope for in the future.
Trust me, Daddy.
Really appreciate it again, all of you, our listeners. Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos, producer of Mill Delich. Thank you. This has been TFC Pitch Side.
When it shut down, that's not me and it shut down. Ring
what?
It shut down. Hey. Fashion Week and it shut down. Went to the show sitting in the front row in a black tracksuit and it shut down. Touched the road and it shut down. Boy, better know when it shut down. Yeah, take time if a man want try me. No time. Usain Bolt when I run up on stage, I pick up the mic and it's reload time. Don't know your songs, but they know mine. That's why I got gigs just like Joe Grind. After the show, I'll be rolling mine. Don't care about the no smoking sign. They tried to steal my vision. This ain't a culture, it's my religion. God knows I don't wanna go prison. But if a man want try me, trust me, listen. Me and my G's ain't scared of police. We don't listen to no politician. Everybody on the same mission, and we don't care about your ism and schisms. Cause it's shut down. That's not me and it's shut down.
Okay.
Shut down. Hey. Fashion Week and it shut down. Went to the show sitting in the front row in a black tracksuit and it shut down. Touched the road and it shut down. Boy, better know when it shut down. Yeah. You wanna act like a G for the camera? You say you're Muslim, you say you're Rasta. Say you don't eat pork. Don't
say goodbye.
Liar, you're just an actor. Blood, you're not on your dean. And if Selassie I saw you, he would say blood. Take